Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available 20-minute samples of recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new sample podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. In addition, you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost simply by becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We hope you enjoyed today's sample podcast.
Thanks, Rick. I think one of the fun jobs at NACSW conference is to introduce a speaker who really doesn't need any introduction. But I think that's probably how NACSW eases in new board chairs. So it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Diana Garland. Diana and I have a long history of collaborating at different points in time. Diana probably remembers one of our first collaborations when we had kind of an interfaith experience. We were writing about social ministry. And from my perspective in the Roman Catholic tradition, I was talking about pastoral ministry, being the service ministry, you know, within the church. And Diana was saying, but we can't write about pastoral ministry because that's the work of the pastor. And so we began to work out many of the different ways of dealing with language and different points of view. And I think that's a piece of the richness of NACSW. So for those of you who don't know Diana, if there's anybody at all in the room, Dr. Garland is an inaugural dean of the School of Social Work at Baylor University in Waco, Texas, where she served on the faculty since 1997. Her newest book is entitled Inside Our Families, Living the Faith Together, a result of a research project identifying community service as the most significant contributor to the growing faith among children, adults, and families. She's the author, co-author, or editor of 17 other books, including NACSW's Church Social Work. Her book, Family Ministry, A Comprehensive Guide, was the winner of the 2000 Book of the Year Award of the Academy of Parish Clergy at Princeton Seminary. She's known for her leadership with congregations in family and community ministries and for her research on the faith life of families. She earned her MSSW and PhD from University of Louisville and is a licensed clinical social worker in Texas. So please welcome Diana.
We go back, don't we? Sister Ann Patrick Conrad, I met her, first of all, long before we started arguing about terminology, in her writings. And she had an article written a long time before I started writing, because she's a lot older than I am. And she wrote with Sister Vincentia Joseph an article on parish social work. And it piqued my interest, and that is what sent me into this field. So, Sister Ann Patrick, thank you for your pioneering for all of us. What a gift you have been in my life. I want to share with you, and I know you're tired, I'm tired, and I'm not going to be long tonight, but I think we are at a watershed moment in the history of the social work profession and for us as Christians who are social workers. And I've been at this a while, but I want to share with you three stories from my own professional life that make me think that we are at a point that we have an opportunity before us that is truly amazing. The first story is about a retreat that we held this August with church leaders, and I want to give you a little bit of background to this. I've been fascinated for a few years with what's been called the externally focused church movement. Are any of you familiar with that movement? Well, there's a book called The Externally Focused Church, pastored by two guys. One of them is Rick Rousseau at Life Bridge Church in Longmont, Colorado. And I happened to be about 40 minutes up the road from his church, and they were having this conference. And I popped in, and there were 2,000 people who were doing community ministry, and I didn't know any of them. They were not my people. And yet they were doing much of what I had been doing for a while. And I heard Rick say in a sermon at that conference, Christians don't grow until they serve. One of our members was serving in a halfway house, and a man there asked him to pray. He said, I don't know how, but I'll go get one and be right back. He came to me, his pastor, to ask for a prayer, and so I helped him learn to pray. Faith begins in the doing of it, and the doing of faith drives us to pray and to Bible study and to worship. I think, and they think, for too long, many churches have gotten it backwards. They've acted as though people are called first to develop an orthodox faith, to worship, and to pray, and then when all those elements of faith are lined up, we lead people into service. But Jesus called the disciples and engaged them immediately in ministry, and taught them as they journeyed together, as they healed and tried to heal and messed up and ran into snags and messed up and learned. A church is not really a church if it's not engaged in the life of the community through ministry and service to others. And it's a direct quote from these church leaders. Rick Rousseau says, the biggest factor in our churches retaining people is not personal follow-up or joining a small group. It's being involved from the very beginning in service to others in the community. It is mobilization that equals assimilation. It is mobilization that equals assimilation. Rick Warren at Saddleback Church, some of you know that church, has astutely observed that a congregation's strength is not its seating capacity, but its sending capacity. The deployment of its members into ministry. And these externally focused church folks are not just about benevolence either. They talk with that old adage about not just handing out a fish to a man to feed him for today, but teaching a man to fish so that he can feed himself for a lifetime. But they take it further. They have reasoned, what if the man could catch enough fish that he could sell some at market and support his family? But what if he needs a truck to get his catch to market? Can we help him get a truck? And what if he doesn't have access to a pond? Think of the difference, Rick said, it would make if we helped people own the pond. These guys quote Jesus a lot, but they also quote Deuteronomy 15:4 that says, there need be no poor among you. Yes, they say there will always be poor in the land. We will have a steady influx of immigrants and people who've suffered financial reversals because of tragedies or downturns in the economy. But the church, through mercy and justice, can help to ensure that people don't stay poor. Now, these are not social workers talking to church leaders. These are church leaders talking to one another and to their congregations and to us. So at this summit, I had these guys there talking to us in the School of Social Work, where I am, about what can we do, what do they need from us. We've been sitting on the side of a mountain for quite a while, and one of them, actually the executive director of the externally focused church movement, is also a foster father. And because of his experiences as a foster father, he has committed his congregation to leading other congregations in the state to end the public child welfare waiting list of children for foster care. His goal is for every child who needs a foster family to have one. In our discussion, though, he issued a challenge that haunts me. He said, I'm a busy guy, and he's got a house full of foster kids. I'm a busy guy, but I don't want to just be busy. I want to be effective. These church leaders want to engage their congregations in service to their community. They want to empower poor people in their communities to purchase the ponds. They want to ensure that every child has a home. They believe that believing is not the heart of the gospel. Service is the heart of being Christian. We are not saved by good works, they believe, but we are saved to do good works. And that's what they're preaching. And that's what they're modeling. Another quote from Rick Rusaw: effectiveness is not measured by what happens inside the church, but rather by the impact the people of the church have on their community. The word he uses there, impact. It's not enough to be busy. It's not enough to go to Mexico on a mission trip to paint a mission building brown that they painted white 2 years ago. The motivation of these externally focused church leaders is to lead Christians to live their faith through service. That's the motivation. To live our faith through service. But they also recognize that what sustains service, what sustains the saints in that long work, is believing that they're doing the best work they can do, that they are being effective, that they're having an impact on real human need. That's story number one. Story number two is the research that we have done with congregations, and this is the oldest of the research. And this is a survey instrument we've been using for more than 20 years called the Church Census. It's used by church leaders to assess the strengths and challenges of families in their congregation. They fill out the survey instruments, and then they send them to us, and we run them through the scanning and preparing the reports, and then provide consultation to churches around this data. But the neat thing is we get the data. So we have changed the instrument some 23 times in the 20 years we've been using it. It's been through many renditions. The last section of the survey was added in 2001, actually, and it's simply called How the Church Can Help. There are topics, and you get to choose three, I think, on the survey. They include communication skills. This is families now, people talking about their family life. Communication skills, romance and sexuality in married life, romance and sexuality in single life, roles of men and women, and so forth, managing money, managing time. There are 52 items listed to choose from. Okay, so that's going on. Now, at the same time, I'm doing a study of families and faith, and I got really interested as I talked to families about their faith life together, how many of them told me about serving together in the community. So I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Let's put an item on the survey instrument to see if they need any help with that. So we added item 53, which is helping and serving others outside our family. Okay, since that time, we have surveyed Presbyterian, Lutheran, United Methodist, Southern Baptist, Cooperative Baptist, Unitarian, that was an interesting one, Episcopal, Christian, Disciples of Christ, Church of God, and non-denominational congregations, 50 congregations, more than 50 congregations. And what we found, what would you think would be the top item that families are asking for help from? I would have guessed communication, huh? Number 53! Across all congregations and all kinds of families, what they were asking for was help our church, help our family serve in our community. It blew away the pastors who were not expecting that. Now, it's not that they aren't already volunteering in the community. They are. We found that these families were more likely to be engaged in service together than they were to be in Bible study together as a family. Okay, so they're already doing it, but now what they're saying to us is, we want our church to guide us. We can volunteer. I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities. You can do walks for all kinds of causes. You can adopt a section of the highway. You can clean up a park. You can serve. You can work in children's programs. What these families were saying to us was that they want somehow to ground what they are doing in the life of their church and in their life of faith together. That was story two. Story three is one that Terry Wolfer and I have walked together. A group of us, colleagues, all of us in NACSW, several years ago, launched a project called Service and Faith. And in that project, we surveyed 35 congregations, and in them, 7,300 church attenders. What we learned in that project changed how we think about church and how we think about being faithful. The survey showed, and that was said a minute ago, that it was community service that was significantly related to other measures of faith, such as prayer and Bible study. And in fact, active engagement in service to others had a more profound relationship on the faith of ordinary Christians than any other faith activity, including congregational worship. This was true for adults, and it was also true for teenagers. Service is the most significant and powerful contributor to faith. And you can imagine what we can do with this when we talk to youth ministers. It really isn't about retreats. They're important. Bible study, it's important. But if we're not engaging young people in service that's meaningful to them as a living of their faith, we're missing it. So I put those three things together in my head, and I'm thinking about them. This is a moment like none other in the almost 40 years I have been working with congregations as a social worker. These church leaders recognize they need us. They need social workers. They need us to use our professional knowledge and skills to help them not just be busy, but to be effective, to have an impact, and to matter in the lives of people. And second, they need us to be culturally competent as leaders in Christian communities. I want to talk about each of those for just a minute. To not just be busy, but be effective. The externally focused church movement is collecting models, all kinds of models of ways that congregations are engaging their community, and they're available on the web. It is really quite interesting to see all the things that congregations are doing, tackling human trafficking that takes place in their cities, helping children vulnerable to school failure to hang in school and raise their reading and math ability, putting together teams to wrap around a neighbor vulnerable to homelessness, helping that neighbor develop job skills and security, income security, all kinds of things that they're doing. But what they said was they can collect the models. They just don't know how to assess them. They don't know which models really work at helping people, not only feeding hungry people, but owning the pond. They have church folks who want to minister, but how do they help them not just see the needs of poor people, but also their strengths? How do they build mutual relationships of friendship, not just mentoring in which the service recipient is always the needy one, which is a very disempowering place to be? They're asking us for program evaluation and research. They're asking for tested models. They're asking, dare I say it, what's the word? Evidence-based, or at least implied. They don't want to just make Christians busier. They want to work in ways that are empowering and work for social justice. They want to know what we know. They need us to write, not just for our academic journals and for one another, but for the church. A great example is the wonderful and very popular book, When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor. It's being studied widely in congregations. Somebody at my table is teaching it in her congregation. Great book. So is The Hole in Our Gospel. One was written by an economist. The other was written by a businessman. Why didn't we write those books? We need to be writing those books for congregations to be studying, those curricula for congregations to be studying. So that's one thing I see. And the second one is we need to be culturally competent. Now, you think you know what I mean by that, but you don't. Or maybe you do. Our profession expects us to deliver cultural competence in the context where we work. What that means for us when we work with congregations is that we...
Thank you for listening today to this 20-minute sample of NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. Just a reminder that you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost by simply becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops, which provide CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, and our online continuing education program. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in to our podcast session today.